Hello, hello, baby, you called, I can't hear a thing. I have got no service in the club, you say, say.
Welcome to Innovation Hub, I'm Kara Miller. Last week, we looked at how mobile computing is changing the world with Michael Saylor. And today, we examine the mobile phone market, starting, of course, with the 800-pound gorilla, Apple. And we're joined by the New York Times' Brian Chen, who covers the business and the breakthroughs of mobile phones. Brian Chen, thanks for being here.
Hey, thanks for having me.
So we've seen recently the release of the iPhone 5 and that sort of typical crazy waiting in line for hours behavior that you might see on, you know, those day after Thanksgiving sales. And we've also seen Apple's stock price surge from under $300 a share 2 years ago to now about $700 a share. So the question is, can anyone break Apple's stranglehold over the mobile phone and the tablet market?
I think that's certainly what everybody's trying to do right now. I think I've talked to a few people about this, and the only possibility that anybody sees right now is that the iPhone is starting to look kind of old school. It hasn't really changed. The appearance of it has been pretty much the same for the past 2 or 3 years or so. So I think if other manufacturers send a message and say, you know, my phone looks very, very different, it's going to be something new that you can try, then they could try to pry people off of the iPhone. But I think that the chances are slim. I mean, people are so locked into the software. At this point, there are like 500, 700,000 apps inside the App Store, and people have apps that they already bought for the phone itself, and it's going to be hard for them to let those go.
When you look at what Nokia, what Motorola, what they're doing as alternatives, are you impressed, or do you think, yeah, this is not quite up to Apple's level yet?
Well, you know, I'm generally not a guy who shares his opinions too much about products, but I think it's interesting to see how they're differentiating in the market. They're certainly trying different things, like Nokia's trying a wireless battery charger, basically, so like you would place your phone on a mat. And it's definitely interesting to see how people are trying to compete in the market. It's getting kind of quirky and strange, but at the same time, very interesting.
Now, we have seen Samsung taking... They've had a little market share in terms of Samsung Galaxy phones and tablets. But we also saw Apple beat Samsung in a $1 billion, very high-profile case. What do you think the impact of that is going to be on the market?
Well, right now, the immediate impact, of course, is that Samsung is going to have some trouble continuing to sell its phones. Apple's already put in an order to the judge to remove some of the Samsung products. And right now, of course, the lawyers are fighting to appeal, and this is going to drag on for a while. But I think the bigger question is if this is going to cause trouble for other people making Android phones, because some of the features discussed in that lawsuit were from the core Android operating system. So there's a possibility that people will have to design around the things that Samsung was accused of copying. And it could overall change the way that phones look in the coming years. But the possibility is that the cost of an Android phone could increase if the manufacturers choose to license the patents from Apple.
Which may be a problem for Google, which puts out Android and uses it sort of as a platform for its own success, right?
I think it creates a problem for Google, but at the same time, it's not something that can't be solved. I mean, there are different ways of implementing features for smartphones, and plenty of smart people working at Google. So I think they're gonna find their way around this.
So let's talk a little bit about mobile payments. And one of the really interesting things here is that Starbucks has been very early in jumping on the mobile payment bandwagon. So if I go into Starbucks and I'm part of their mobile payment system, how does life change for me in terms of getting my daily coffee?
So Starbucks is definitely an interesting company because, you know, they're not really a technology company, but at the same time, they're the biggest player in mobile payments right now. So right now, if you had like a smartphone, like an iPhone or an Android phone, you could load the Starbucks app and pay for your cup of coffee or your croissant or whatever you want. And it would just bill automatically to your credit card, and you wouldn't really have to do anything beyond that. They've been processing something like 1 million transactions per week, which is more than any other type of mobile payment processor right now.
So let me just stop you there for a second. Okay.
Sure.
So this physically means you go into the store and you just sort of swipe your phone
You would load the Starbucks app, and then you would hold it up to the cash register, and they would scan the phone. So it's basically like a barcode that the register would scan, but your credit card information is inside it, so you wouldn't necessarily have to bring your wallet to Starbucks.
Okay, so it's a 1 second transaction. They're scanning it just like at the supermarket they would scan, you know, a can of peas that you bought.
Yeah, yeah, okay. And like people seem to like it a lot because there's some reward points that come with it, and it just instills loyalty within the customers. So it's a nice thing for them to have.
And do you see mobile payments? You indicated that they really are catching on at Starbucks. Do you see them catching on other places too?
Well, you know, I'm kind of skeptical about this space because there's so many things happening right now in mobile payments. There's so many different companies trying to offer a version of the mobile wallet, like Chase is doing this, Bank of America is working on something, Square is a startup that's working with Starbucks on something, and there's all these different startups offering different methods to pay with your phone. And competition is usually a good thing, but I think with this particular technological solution, it's kind of a bad thing to have too many people involved because as a customer yourself, you don't want to like walk into a store and have to load 9 different applications or like choose between 9 different applications to figure out how to pay for something. You know, if you walk into a mall, you go to Macy's, oh, I'm going to load the Macy's app and pay that way. Or if I walk into another store and I have to load something else and pay that way, it needs to be something that's really easy for us to understand. And ideally, something that's sort of like an all-in-one solution would be best. And that would require one dominant player to rise in this market.
Do you think that will eventually happen? I mean, are we looking at a sort of VHS Betamax situation where right now you might not know who's going to win, but eventually somebody will win. We will be able to just swipe our phones at Starbucks and Macy's and everywhere else, and it'll be as easy as that.
Well, I think if that ever happens, it's going to take a while because everybody wants a piece of the pie right now. And nobody wants to be controlled by one company. So, like, these companies are going to duke it out for a while. But I would assume that maybe one or two big players are going to emerge victorious at some point because that's usually what happens.
Let me ask you here about one of the downsides of cell phones and get your take on it. Your colleague at the New York Times, David Pogue, who also hosts Nova Science Now, he went on the PBS NewsHour in August, and he talked about losing his iPhone. And I'm going to play a little clip of him
talking about that for you.
The great thing was that I lost the phone on Monday when I was on this train, and Apple has a feature called Find My iPhone. You go to this website, and it shows you on a map, either like a street map or a satellite photograph of where the thing is right now. And it's available for other phones, too, Android phones and so on. And it's the greatest feature if you ever lose your phone.
So Brian Chen from Wired and the New York Times, clearly, if you can find your phone from far away, there are other entities like cell phone companies who probably know where it is, too. So one of the questions for David Pogue was, should you be concerned about privacy? And here's what he had to say.
Verizon could be listening in to every phone call you make. Your grocery store could be looking over your purchases right now. Visa could be laughing their heads off at what you bought this month. I mean, there could be conspiracies and privacy invasions all around us. So, yes, if you believe that somebody is secretly putting spy apps on your phone and monitoring where you go, that ship has left a long time ago. The cell phone companies do know where you are at all time. They have triangulation at any time. So if you don't want cell phones not to have the potential of knowing where you are, don't own a cell phone.
Brian Chen, David Pogue says, look, they do know where you are all the time. Are there real privacy concerns here?
Yeah, I would agree with David in general that privacy is sort of thrown out the window once you plug into sort of the smartphone experience. It's like our traditional definition of privacy is like an area of seclusion when you think about it. So when you plug into somebody's server, like you connect to a server and use somebody's service on the internet, you're basically, you know, you're renting out somebody's space. So you sort of like give up that area of seclusion. This is sort of my dorky way of putting it, you know. Expanding on what David says, there are hundreds of thousands of smartphone applications, a lot of of them are connected to the internet, and you never really know like what's going on under the hood. You have to sort of take a leap of faith and just assume that these companies are not doing bad things with your information, like sharing it with marketers and that kind of stuff. I think a lot of people are okay with taking that leap of faith, but we should be generally cautious about the information that we store on the internet. Like, I don't think you would want to put really sensitive documents on the internet, or you know, just things that could be incriminating and things like that for yourself. This has been the rule since before smartphones. You want to keep really personal information off the internet.
You talked about we sort of have to trust that people won't share information with marketers. Why would we assume that companies don't share your information with marketers? I certainly know that very often if I sign up for like a free email blast, all of a sudden I will start getting things that are quite clearly related to that topic of interest, but I did not sign up for them.
This is an issue I raised in my own book that came out last year. I had a chapter on privacy, and something I point out was that smartphones are very new types of devices. A lot of the laws that we have around privacy and technology are related to computers, which are more like tethered experiences where these things don't like walk with us. We don't necessarily carry and use them all day like we would with a smartphone. There needs to be some stronger laws in terms of regulating what software providers and what hardware manufacturers can do with our information and keeping them in check. And those laws haven't really been created yet, but there have been like people discussing the creation of new legislation for this.
Do you think that there's any concern that, let's say, hackers, if they could get into a system like Verizon or something, they could absolutely pinpoint where individual people are? Because every time you get a call or every time you go through a Starbucks, there's a location of where you are.
Right, right. I mean, that's a really good point because we're living in this age that we call the cloud now, right, where we basically have our personal identification and information stored so much on the internet now that infiltration of a carrier or a big company could be considered a national security threat at this point. So right now, with the way that things are going, with these devices that are always connected, always on, I definitely think there's a concern about not just, you know, having something stupid like your photos stolen, but like some major information stolen from the government is a possibility at some point because of all the reliance we have on the internet now.
Well, is there any concern actually on the part of companies that you have all this information in the cloud or information that it may be proprietary to them, but that the government, if they're going after a criminal, a terrorist, might put an awful lot of pressure on Google, on Verizon to say, where is that person? What are they doing? What kind of messages have they been sending?
Yeah, there's always the possibility of law enforcement trying to send a subpoena to request personal information about something potentially on your smartphone, for instance. And that's something that's also been discussed by people in the law, how we need to have new laws created around what types of information people can request from our smartphones and our computers and so forth, but especially our smartphones because these things are like a treasure trove of personal information at this point.
I also want to ask you about something else you wrote about, which I thought was so interesting, this idea of profit-free hardware, and that has been sort of talked about in recent days. We have seen Amazon, Google sort of being in these discussions where they may give away some of their hardware, some of their actual physical tablets or phones or whatever it is, so that you have them and that you can run what they want to run on it. Right now, we think of things as, you know, iPhones, iPads being very expensive. Can you imagine a time where actual hardware is given away?
Well, you know, in the technology space, free is never really free, you know, like you were saying, the trade-off would be if a company gave me a quote-unquote free tablet, then there would probably be some takeaway that I would have to probably sacrifice some personal information and let them keep tracking like my personal profile in exchange for the services they provide. It's generally something that some small companies are trying, like the article I wrote about was a mobile payments provider called GoPayGo, and they're offering free tablets to merchants and saying, you guys can have the tablet for free, but we're going to take 2.75% of each transaction for, you know, whenever you charge a mobile payment. So it's sort of subsidizing the hardware just to get somebody to use my service, basically. I do see that happening. I don't know if that's going to happen on a mainstream level where I would just get a free phone all the time.
But free on the front end, maybe not so free once you on the back end.
Because, I mean, right now you could get a smartphone or an iPhone or something for free, but it would it would have a 2-year contract, and you'd have to stay committed to that contract or pay a termination fee to get out of it. So it's generally like free is just not free, and that's sort of my pessimistic way of looking at it.
Brian Chen has been my guest. He covers technology for Wired and the New York Times, and he's written extensively about the cell phone industry. Brian Chen, thank you very much for joining us.
Hey, thanks so much, Kara.
And when we return, we look at the intersection of magic and science. Remember that you can find our free Innovation Hub podcasts online at wgbh.org/innovationhub. And you can check out episodes on everything from the future of global warming to how to introduce healthy foods into schools. That is all at wgbh.org/innovationhub. I'm Kara Miller, and this is Innovation Hub.